Business Matters is proudly sponsored by Print Supplies Frosses. With 21 years in business, Print Supplies provides managed print solutions with local support and remote ink monitoring, saving your business time and money. Print Supplies, your local printer and photocopier company.
Well, delighted to be joined by Martine Kelly in studio, a person who many of our listeners may well know, not least for having been the main man at the Centra at the Mountaintop in Letterkenny for many, many years. Martine, let's just maybe bring people up to speed as to exactly where you are now. You sold up, moved away from Centra, but still big connections with the whole retail sector.
Yes, very much so. And thank you very much for having me, Chris. I was delighted, actually, when you reached out and asked me to come and talk on the show. So, yeah, so we sold the Mountaintop, our business on the Mountaintop, about 18 months ago. We sold it to Des and Martha Cosgrove. Des and Martha has done a fantastic job since taking it over, and they've really, you know, brought it to another level again. I would say, you know, we had it at a good level ourselves, but certainly Des and Martha has done a fantastic job there at the Mountaintop. So for the last 18 months, what have I been doing? Well, I suppose, you know, part of the reason for selling the business was to spend more time with my parents, particularly my dad. So for the last 18 months, I've been spending more time, you know, both of my parents are getting that little bit older. So I spent more time with them, getting practical help for them on a sort of a weekly basis. And also, I suppose, taking the opportunity to spend time with my own family. They're teenagers now, so they need that little bit extra help. And I have a taxi service at the weekends, obviously, which is booming, albeit I'm not getting paid for it. So for the last 18 months, very much around family, catching my breath after, you know, working for 14 years building a business in Letterkenny. So just catching my breath.
14 years building up a business. I'm sure you were not working the 40 hours a week, and a lot of responsibilities, big team of staff. I think over 70 were employed in the Mountaintop Centra. So there was a lot of demands on you.
There was a lot of demands on me. But what I would say, you know, I had 30 years experience in retail, starting back in Ballinasloe at a young age of 16, working as a part-timer and working my way then through all the different management levels right up to the last corporate role was a regional manager with Musgrave's Retail Partners. And I was just reflecting earlier on today, you know, I was managing 28 stores, about 2,000 staff, 70 million turnover. So, you know, I had a very good foundation when we took over at the Mountaintop. And when we did take over the Mountaintop, and I say we because my wife's very important in the running of the business as well, I think we only had 20 staff. I think at our peak, we had 103 or 104 staff. And when we finished up, I think we had 82 or 83 staff, something in and around that. For the first 6 or 7 years, yeah, I would agree. Certainly there was long hours. You'd be putting in 60, 70, maybe 80 hours a week. I would be in the business 7 days a week, albeit not 8 hour days or 12 hour days. Sunday, Saturday, you'd be in for 3 or 4 hours per day. But in the end there, I had 12 of a management team. We had a lot of good structures, a lot of processes. The operations was slick. The management team really managed it in the last 7 or 8 years for me. And that was the basis for me starting up this new role as a consultant, as to try and take those learnings to maybe other people out there in business.
So this new role, tell me about the whole thought process. Was this something at the back of your mind for quite a while?
Yeah, well, it was in the sense that I would have a huge network of I would call them friends, people in business that would regularly reach out to me and ask my opinion on something. And you know what? I enjoy offering solutions and offering my opinion on stuff. And I suppose having been a regional manager and having spent 14 years running my own business, you know, I have a lived experience of the ups and the downs, the stresses, and I said the successes and the not so successful stuff. So I suppose, yeah, it was something that was always in the back of my mind that if I did sell the business, that was potentially a role that I would look at. And more people, while I was off, let's call it, for the last 18 months, were ringing me out of the blue and saying, if you had 5 minutes, could I meet? Or, you know, would you have time to come and see my store or whatever the case may be? And then other people outside of retail, you know, would also ring me, you know, for completely different industries, you know, car industries, you know, environmental industries, you know, fresh food industries, just offering or asking me to offer an opinion on a problem. So, you know, the business, it happened out of, I suppose, not necessity, but it happened out of a sense of people asking for help.
And you can't beat experience, and certain things are tried and trusted. Also, are you a person who thinks outside of the box as well?
Very much so. So I suppose every business has issues currently with staff retention. Staff is probably the biggest problem right now for businesses. And I would say every phone call I'm taking in relation to consultancy, staff would be one of the many problems, but staff would probably be the biggest problem. So staff retention and that whole piece around developing staff. And we had a tried and trusted way of developing a team and retaining a team. And it was a little bit outside the box in terms of how we'd done things. You know, for many years, and I still even went last year, I went to Pendulum in Dublin, which is an event for leaders. And it's a two-day event where they take world leaders in and they give you, I suppose, their perspective in terms of how to best create and develop a high-performing team. And there's ways about doing that. And I suppose for us, it was around, you know, people has a kind of a corporate word, I think it's called personal candor. We would frame it in a different way. We would direct with respect, you know, and be direct with our people, but respect them as well. And we get that back and also be willing to receive feedback also. You know, if I'm going to be honest with someone, I'd expect them to be honest with me. So for us, we developed a really strong high-performing management team and then by extension, a really strong business and a wrong staff. So or a solid, strong staff in our business.
So tell us a little bit about sort of the things that are important in terms of staff retention. It's not just about pay and conditions. There are pathways maybe to promotion. There's welfare. There's support. Lots of other things as well.
Yeah, there's all of that. And I would say the first thing we would do is, you know, people needs to have a strong and solid and consistent communication in terms of what you're doing as a business and how they're contributing to that, or as the case may be, not contributing to that. And for us, it was around weekly meetings, weekly KPI meetings for our management team. It was around annual appraisals, and that was across whether you're a manager or a full-time or a part-time, and also mid-year reviews, so just regular check-ins. And that was more of the structure stuff. But other stuff, what we found worked for us was, you know, employee of the month worked for us. You know, that connection, telling people you're doing a really good job. Another way of, I suppose, connecting with those people for us was just acknowledging their birthday. Now, whether you have 200 staff or 20 staff, it's really easy to acknowledge someone's birthday. I mean, their file clearly says what their date of birth is. So it's not as if you haven't got the information. And AI will now produce a list for you. Right. And so you'll get a ping a week beforehand. So you get that ping, you know, it's easy to organise a cake and a card. And some people see that as being soft, you know, and it is soft management, hugely important in terms of your culture and in terms of your core values. And like we're talking about stuff now that, you know, large multinationals are doing for years, like culture. You know, what is your culture? You know, what does your business represent? What do you represent? And what's the core values of your business as well? So staff retention is a huge, huge piece of work. And if you do it right, you grow your reputation, you grow your credibility as a business as well, because those individuals who you've now retained are promoting your business for you 7 days a week.
So a lot of small things can make a big difference.
Huge difference, huge difference for us. We had a really strong retention. We had over 85% retained staff over our 14 years. You know, we had management within our management team. We had people qualify as accountants. We had people get degrees and bachelor's degrees in business while working for us. We had other individuals getting, you know, supervisory courses, you know, business degrees, all while working for us. And we knew we'd get the benefit of that. But we also knew there was a risk that these people would leave and take that, I suppose, qualification somewhere else. But we were happy enough to take, and I won't say it's a risk, we were happy enough to allow that to happen. because that person was allowed to reach their full potential. So I think staff retention is huge. I think staff and how you communicate and how you treat your staff is huge. It's getting bigger. And I know AI will play a part into the future, but I think there's space for AI and for humans, obviously.
So at the moment, one of the things that you're doing is you're facilitating structured workshops. So what exactly does that entail?
So depending on the business, it could be a half-day workshop or it could be a full-day workshop. At the moment, what I'm doing is I'm actually doing 2 months, 3 months and 4 months working with businesses just to try and establish a way forward around staff, particularly around structures. We talked about it earlier on, you know, appraisals, mid-year reviews, KPI meetings, sitting in on those, chairing those KPI meetings, KPI key performance indicators, hugely important if you're trying to, you know, there is no fat on the bone anymore in business. You really need to run it really, really tight. So it's facilitating that stuff. In terms of workshops, it's around culture, you know, developing a culture. We need to get a baseline first and then from that, then run a workshop in terms of, you know, does your staff understand what your core values are? Do they understand what you represent? Are they clearly able to articulate that? And if not, why not? And that's a huge piece of work for any company, no matter what size you are. Your company should be your staff should be able to articulate what your core values is, what your culture is, and by extension, what it means to work for you in your business.
And what about a company where maybe there's a number of the staff who are not motivated, maybe they're just drifting through life, they don't really care too much about their job? Can you give advice on how to deal with that? Because it may be difficult to move them on or maybe difficult to replace them as well.
Well, it's interesting you say that. It goes back to that direct with respect. Everyone knows that that person is not happy in their workplace. They're not happy in their job. It may take several meetings to get to the core problem here. The onus is initially on the employer to find out what is the blockage for that individual. Bear in mind that that individual has spent time probably doing 80% of the role or 85% of the role. So there's 15% not being delivered. Let's concentrate on the 15 and let's acknowledge the 80% or the 85%. So there is an onus on employers, as I see it, to try and find out what the blockage is for that member of staff. And then there's ways around, you know, continuous improvement programs or, you know, personal improvement programs where you do take them through and it's a regular check-in. But in the main, in my experience, most people want to do a fair day's work for a fair day's pay. Most people want to do a good day's work.
And it's not to say that that person could not become a very good part of the company.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's happened on numerous occasions in my business. But even most recently, I was dealing with someone and that person was with them for a couple of years. And they found in the last 3 or 4 months that they weren't delivering on a number of tasks. And I suppose their default was, I think we should let that person go. And I told them to just spin it on his head completely. Let's focus on the 20% and see why aren't they doing the 20%. Is it something that we haven't done in terms of training? Have we not articulated very clearly what we expect from them? Have we painted the picture in terms of what good looks like? I think we need to reflect in first before we reflect out. And I think there's a piece around that.
And when you're dealing with senior management who maybe have done things a certain way for a long, long time, how do you counteract if there's an element of stubbornness there or maybe they're not really open to bringing in outside ideas and something that's a little bit different?
So I had an experience of this not that long ago and my response to the individual was, you've employed me to come in here to advise you and my role is to advise you in an open and an honest way with no agenda. And if you don't want my advice, I don't think we can work together.
And are you a little bit of a Gordon Ramsay coming in with the axe, or how do you approach things?
I wouldn't say that. But I think using my own lived experience where you can point to successes. So that lived experience, I think, is actually why people employ me. And they know that there is no real, how would I say, you won't hear from me, you know, to phrase it, fancy corporate phrasing or, you know, terminology which is very corporate. You're going to hear from me in a very upfront, straight, using simple language that everybody understands. So no, definitely not Gordon Ramsay. That's not the way it works. And I remember actually a long time ago, a sales director actually saying to me, you know, your biggest problem is about getting people on the bus. Just get them on the bus and then you can get the right seats.
Yeah.
But just get them on the bus.
So tell us, what's a typical week for Martin Kelly involved at the moment?
Well, at the moment, I'm working with a group of stores. So it's a retail group in the Northwest. So they have four stores, they have a couple of restaurants, and they also have a furniture store as well. So a typical week for me is store audits. So it's going into store, it's walking the floor as a consumer, firstly and foremostly. It's giving feedback in terms of how I feel the customer sees the business. And then it's up to standards. It's about monitoring and maintaining standards and giving some advice around that. Once a week, then we meet as a management team, which is about 5 hours of a meeting. So we take time out of the business to look at the KPIs, look at the budgets and the sales targets for that week, look at the events that's coming down the line in terms of planning. And then there were certain things that I would have done in my own business in terms of planning events. We would have used a four quad approach, which is, you know, it's a very simple approach. It's planning an event using four headings: products and services, environment, which is actually look and feel. It could be shelving, could be that type of stuff. Communication, which is around marketing, but it's also internal communication to your staff, making sure that they're up to speed in terms of what's coming down the track. And then the final piece then will be around sales. You know, how are we going to get the sale? You know, how are we going to get that sale? So there's a four-quad approach. So we would look at marketing as well. So we'd advise in marketing. And then there's longer-term strategic stuff. So, for example, staff charters. You know, what is a staff charter? A staff charter is something that feeds into that core values and the cultural piece that we talked about before, which is hugely important. And even so, probably more important for the next generation that's coming through. And that's why it's a longer-term play. You know, you really need to be getting your wheels moving on that culture, core values, and that staff charter. And a staff charter is very simple. It's a set of guidelines that we live by. Mm. You know, it's our principles, guiding principles. Someone might call it our guiding principles in terms of how we run our business, you know, how we act in our community, how we act and how we respect our staff. So those guiding principles are hugely. So it's being honest, not being selfish, not being greedy. You know, so yes, business is about making profit, but it's also about reinvesting back into the business so you have a longer-term, sustainable business.
I dare say there's quite a few people who are working in companies where there is no staff charter. And if one comes in, I suppose it does also help them buy into feeling part of the organisation and that they are playing an invaluable part, each and every one of them.
Very much so. And sometimes you may not have staff at all, and maybe all family members. So you have that dynamic as well. And so there has been a couple of conversations that I've had last year around succession planning. And what does that look like? Where you have maybe, you know, two individuals in the business that are not necessarily getting on. And you may have two individuals beneath them that are going to be the next managing directors. But if the originals aren't getting on, how is the next, you know, the next generation going to get on? So there's a lot of, you know, deep, honest reflection in terms of succession planning as well. And that's a completely, you know, different animal altogether. I mean, that really does take a lot of trust, takes a lot of honest reflection, takes a lot of collaboration, collective thinking. And it's not something that can be delivered over 6 months. You know, you could be trying to deliver this over 3 to 5 years.
And Martin, we've touched on communication is so important. And even if it may not be the message somebody wants to hear, you have to be honest about things.
Yeah, well, the way I would work and how I work is, you know, I have very clear objectives coming out of the initial meetings. And then we would have structured conversations coming out of that. We'd have honest challenge. You know, there would be an honest challenge for me in terms of how we can improve a business, looking for practical outcomes, you know, accountability, and then follow up as well on a focused one-to-one basis or focused follow-ups in terms of KPI meetings. And we also look at maybe, you know, honest mentoring. You know, that's it. If you if you're asking me to work with you as a mentor, you know, you want my honesty. And in fairness, most of the people I'm working for want my honesty, you know, and it's lived experience again.
So often it could be a case you sit down with somebody the first time, you're going to have a formal, semi-informal chat about it, and then sort of you suggest, you chart out the way forward for further meetings and how much time maybe you need?
Yeah. Well, the first thing I would do is I would just listen. You know, the first meeting is all about listening. What are the problems? What are the problems? And it's interesting, sometimes what may seem big problems, there's actually simple solutions to it. It's just taking the time out to structure it, set some time frames, allocate the resources towards it, and then it's about just go doing it. And sometimes what happens in the business is people get so engrossed on the small stuff, you know, they've no time then to deliver on maybe the more successful stuff, and they'll see it as a problem. So for me, it's about listening, firstly and foremostly, and then asking the right questions.
You're listening to Business Matters on Highland Radio with me, Chris Ashmore. My guest is Martine Kelly, formerly of Kelly's Mountaintop Centre in Letterkenny, who is now advising many businesses in a consultative role, offering strategic advice, planning ahead, and finding solutions to issues that they may have. Join us again after this short break.
Business Matters is brought to you by Print Supplies. Based in Frosses, Print Supplies has 21 years experience delivering managed print solutions that save you time and money. With remote monitoring and local hands-on support, they take the hassle out of printers and photocopiers. Email sales at printsupplies.ie to find out more.
Welcome back to Business Matters on Highland Radio with me, Chris Ashmore, as I continue my discussion with Martine Kelly. Coming up, I'll find out more about his early career, how he got into retail, how he worked around the country in the days of Quinsworth, Yellow Packs and Morris Pratt, plus the importance of mentoring, diversity in the workplace, and also being supportive of charities and giving back to the community. I suppose there's a great sense of satisfaction for you if somebody engages you to do some consultancy work and you come back to them and maybe identify areas that they may never have thought of before. I mean, that's when your true worth is coming in for them, because without you, they wouldn't have just seen those opportunities or those openings or suggestions.
Yeah. So, like, I suppose in every business, what I would try and do is you've got some low-hanging fruit, which is short-term, and you need to see the gains. So that might be, for example, you know, looking at suppliers, trying to get group deals or better deals with suppliers. And again, using a network, and I have a huge network out there, using that network to find out what's the best deals out there. So it's about trying to get an immediate euro gain, for sure. But then it could be, you know, as I said, the next level is trying to produce that next manager, trying to produce that next assistant manager, trying to secure staff for longer than the 18 months, which is now the average staff retention rate is 18 months. You know, if you can go beyond that, you're doing something really, really well. So, yeah, there is that kind of short-term gains, medium-term gains, and then the long-term strategy as well. But no, in every business I go into, I try and see, is there a euro impact I can have in the first 3 to 6 months?
Tell us a little bit about your own background and growing up and how you got into the retail sector. What was that something that, leaving school or college, that you always thought you'd be involved in?
Definitely not. You know, my parents wanted me to be an accountant. And in as much as I like the numbers, I was no accountant, and I never will be an accountant. And thank God my wife's actually an accountant, and my sister-in-law is an accountant. My two sister-in-laws are accountants, so I have plenty of accountants around me. I don't need to be an accountant. So I kind of fell into retail. You know, I started as a part-timer. I done my Leaving Cert. I failed maths and Leaving Cert, would you believe? And I took a job as a full-timer in Crazy Prices, which back in the early 90s was owned by Wholesale Supermarkets, which was the Quinsworth brand also. It was actually one of the first discounters in Ireland, was Crazy Prices. So I was a full-timer there.
And this was in Galway?
Ballinasloe.
Yeah.
And I spent 2 months there as a full-timer and realised I think I should go back and give this Leaving Cert another go and see, at least can I pass maths. I was young as well. I was only 17, you know. So I went back. I did get the Leaving Cert and I did pass my maths. And I went on as a training manager with Quinsworth for about 2.5 years. And I would have done a number of stores around the country, Dunleary, Ennis, Galway, Shannon, of all places.
So this is when Maurice Pratt was there.
That's
and the Yellow Packs.
Yellow Packs, yeah. Fantastic training, actually, because it really did. It was foundational in terms of, you know, creating that discipline. You know, you're 18 years of age and you have to open a store at 8 o'clock. You know, it means you need to go to bed.
Yeah.
You know, you need to close the store and the store has to be in good shape to trade in the morning and you're the last man standing. You know, that creates discipline. Mm. You know, you'd get it in the ear in the next morning if you didn't.
And from that young age, I know working in Letterkenny, centre at the Mountaintop, you were always a great supporter of local businesses. Did you even see that at a young age, starting off, just the local suppliers coming in and just how important they were?
Well, I would have seen it certainly when I had moved away from Quinsworth and moved into the Super Value side of the house. So I worked for Super Value in Boyle and I worked in Centre in Newbridge as well in my early 20s. Super Value Achill Island for another actually 18 months as well. So I would have seen the local element through that. And then I went on as a rep for a wine company for 3 years as well. And I was all over from Donegal right down to Kerry.
Had problems retaining you.
Yeah, well, you know, as I said before, I mean, retail and the industry at that time was, you know, you had to move if you needed to, if you want. Firstly, you needed to move for experience, but also to get an extra few quid. I suppose when I moved back to Donegal, I worked for the Kernan Group for probably over 4 years as a store manager in Newton Cunningham and Remelton. And from that then, and that was a great experience working with Anthony and Barry Kernan, two very strong, solid businessmen. And the success for Anthony, you can see it clearly throughout the Northwest and the West as well. I think he is somewhere in the region of 12 stores now. But, you know, for me, when I took on the regional manager's role, you know, dealing with 28 different retailers, you know, as I said, 2,000 staff, huge number that I was responsible for. Mm. That early days of opening stores at 8 o'clock and staying until the store was finished at 8 o'clock or 10 o'clock at night, you know, that carried right through to my regional manager role. No one was going to be out behind me to see was I out in stores, or no one's going to check and see was I, you know, out in stores at 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening, or, you know, working the full Monday to Friday. So that early foundation really benefited me as a regional manager. And then the network of people I got, you know, the network of retailers, really, really solid retailers, really solid that I learned from. And they were my mentors. You know, and I do a bit of mentoring myself, some of the junior managers. But those, I had several mentors throughout my career. And I'm just trying to do the same thing. I'm trying to give back. And all they ever done for me was give me their experience. And I would say 9 times out of 10, it was relevant and it was implementable and it was successful. So I'm trying to do the same as well in terms of that mentoring role that I'm trying to develop.
You must have met thousands of people down through the years. And I know you've always been very supportive of charities and people with disabilities. And that's an area where I suppose retail and people are meeting each other face to face, that it ties in very well.
It does. It does. And I actually, for 4 months, I done a little bit of work with Employability Northwest. And I was just trying to open doors for them with some retail outlets in Donegal. And that was trying to facilitate and trying to get people with disabilities paid work. And my own experience probably dates back to Anthony Kernan in Newton Cunningham, where he very much had a policy of trying to employ people with disabilities first. It was given back to the community. It was very important to him. And I could see it actually working, because most people with a disability want to really put in a good day's work. They feel they have to prove themselves, even though they don't, but they feel they have to. So my own experience of working with people with disabilities in Newton Cunningham, and even in my own store when I had it, it yielded such massive positive results for diversity in the workplace. You know, we're lucky to have you know, able bodies, and we're lucky to be able persons, and to be working along someone with a disability, it gives you a real sense of gratitude. It really does. And the benefit is massive then in terms of what they bring to the store as well, their own gratitude for work and that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
And if you look at the retail sector now and compare it to when you were starting off, considerable changes. There was no such thing as a scanner or a barcode or anything like that. And again, if we take a leap forward, maybe in 10 years' time, no doubt it's going to change again. We probably will have very few people actually at the checkout, and I'm sure there's going to be more automation there. But at the same time, you still need that personal touch in the store.
Very much so. I'll give you a statistic that I heard last year. There's 40 million robots working in retail in Japan. It's a huge number. And in saying that, there's still a load of people also working in retail in Japan. So for me, yes, I've seen a massive change over the years, from self-serve checkouts to self-serve hot food to robot serving in our restaurant. We were, I think, the only second or third in the country that put a robot in. And it's more of a novelty than actually a cost-saving device. There has to be change, and there has to be a certain level of automation for all businesses. As costs are rising, there has to be savings got, and it's the automatic way is to automate stuff. In saying that, there'll always be a place for people in business, always a place for people in business. And particularly, actually, I was just commenting to another retailer where we're talking about self-serve checkouts. There is a retail brand, I think is in Denmark, and they actually have branded their man tilt as slow tills. So they've branded them as slow tills. So that allows for people like my father, my mother, who are in their 70s now, who want to spend a bit of time speaking at the till to staff. So that's very unusual, and it's very unique as well, because there are still individuals who want that choice to be able to speak at till. I might be the only person to speak to that day. And then you have people like my own kids, 16, 17, they want self-serve all day long. They want in, they want out, and they don't want any kind of interaction at all. So I think choice is going to be a big thing. Yes, AI is going to play a big part. I see it even in terms of something that the Musgrave Group is rolling out at the moment. Supervision Centre is a project called POP. It's not actually a project that's coming into the stores, where basically the AI will generate an order. So no longer will it be time spent placing orders. But then that time can be reallocated to improving standards. It can be reallocated to customer service. It can be reallocated to marketing. So definitely AI is going to improve efficiencies. It has to, I think it'll maintain profitability. I don't think it'll grow profitability. I think it'll maintain profitability because costs are going to continue to rise. Yeah. So AI is absolutely a necessity for business.
It's going to complement some things. It's not necessarily going to replace them. It's going to be there. What about yourself? I mean, how do you keep up with all the developments? Do you spend a lot of time online? Do you follow certain people? Are you looking at YouTube? How do you keep abreast of trying to be as ahead as you can when it comes to AI and the changes?
I try to read as much industry literature as I possibly can. I still stay very close to people in the industry. And even over the last 18 months, I still talk to people who own stores, who were probably where I was 14 years ago in terms of debt profile, in terms of managing that, in terms of trying to find the work-life balance. So I stay close to the industry. I do a lot of reading. Yes, I do a lot of online. I follow a number of individuals on LinkedIn. There's a chap whom I reached out to there. He's actually an ex-employee of ours who's working in Optum. And he's now focusing in on AI and chatbots and ChatGPT and all the different AIs that supports different parts of his role. And I met him a couple of times, a hugely interesting guy. And I mean, he's learning this on the fly. And by me having a tea or a coffee with him, you know, once every 2 or 3 weeks and just shooting the breeze, I'm learning as well, because, you know, I'm kind of at the generation where it's, you know, I'm learning on the go. These guys are far quicker picking stuff up. But I use that network.
So in a nutshell, if you were to describe what you're doing now, a management consultant with a few other added parts to it. And I know you said it, I've run it, I've fixed it, and I've sold it. That's a nice way of summing it up.
It is, yeah. And a lot of guys probably after I sold up, you know, in the first 2 or 3 months, most of the phone calls that I was feeling was, you know, how do you go about selling your business? Now, interesting, those calls have stopped. And those individuals never actually developed it any further. Because, do you know what, it's difficult to sell your business. You know, it takes years to sell your business. And again, it needs to be structured. It needs to be systematic. There's a way to do it and there's a way not to do it. So management consultancy, yes. Helping with people plans, yes. Succession plans, yes. Workshops, mentoring your managers, absolutely. Service that I offer as well is helping out with interviewing senior management team, give a different perspective. You know, I ask the questions that maybe other people doesn't ask at interviews, and it gives a completely different perspective on the individual in terms of how they respond to that. So, yeah, I think absolutely, you know, I have a lived experience of success. You know, as I said, we came in on the bottom of the mountaintop and we got out at the top, having sold a hugely successful business that we were very proud to run and ran it really successfully over the 14 years.
And timing can be key no matter what business you're in, and there can also be a little bit of luck. And then we get unexpected things like geopolitical factors that can trickle right the way down through. So if you see an opportunity, would you always be of the opinion, you know, if it's out there, go and grasp it?
Very much so. Very much so. And it's interesting that when COVID came, we had only spent about, you know, I think 280 or 300,000 on a revamp. And COVID, we had finished that revamp in the end of January. And COVID came in February. And by the end of that year, we had reversed what we had done in that revamp. And what we needed to do was to extend our business and extend certain categories in our business. And also, coming out of that, we actually developed a role where it took me more into a helicopter role, and we developed a general manager's role. And that gentleman has gone beyond a general manager's role now. He's actually the group financial manager for the Cosgrove Group. So even though COVID was a negative, the opportunities that came out of that was actually far greater. And we all seen it as a negative, including myself. But when I reflect back, it was a massive opportunity for growth, not only for the business, but also for me and my management team to allow them actually to, you know, elevate again in terms of their experience and their skills to do the job for me.
And just in conclusion, looking here at the Northwest, are you pretty upbeat about the prospects for self-employed people, small businesses, bigger businesses in places like Donegal?
I see a huge opportunity in Donegal. Absolutely huge. The amount of micro businesses, the amount of people that's out there doing it for themselves on social media, you know, there's massive opportunity for people. There really is. And I think the one positive is the place we live in Donegal is beautiful. I think you can get a good work-life balance in Donegal. And there's a lot of people looking for that work-life balance as well. So I just look at my own son, who would be very interested in business, but I know he won't be working 70 or 80 hours a week. You know, he has a different outlook on life, and that's good. You know, that's good. So I think there's huge opportunity in Donegal, massive opportunity in Donegal.
And just on that work-life balance, when you're switching off, winding down, what would be your favourite non-work hobby be? Or pastime?
Yeah, I like to go to the gym. I like my motor cars. I have a small collection of motor cars, which I like, and I like to drive those. I don't get an awful lot of free time this winter. As I said earlier on before the interview started, I'm doing a lot of taxiing at the weekend for three teenagers and not getting the fare for it either, only getting grief. But so, yeah, I spend a lot of time. Look, gym work, I try to get to the gym 3 mornings a week. I get up at home, get up and down to home regular. I walk the dogs. So, yeah, that'll be about the size of it. I'm going to get back to scuba diving this year. That was a huge hobby of mine. It kind of fell off the radar there just after COVID. So that's for 2026 is a big part.
And Martin, if people want to follow up and maybe they want to contact you, you would use LinkedIn a lot. So that's probably the best way.
It is. And I found that LinkedIn is where people contact me mostly. I haven't set up a website. I don't think I'll need to set up a website. I think LinkedIn, you know, I believe I have a strong enough profile in the county and beyond, so people can get me on LinkedIn, and it's not hard to get someone's number in Donegal, as we know.
Well, my thanks to Martin Kelly for coming into studio for this week's Business Matters. That's it for this edition. As always, may I conclude by wishing you a healthy, happy and profitable week ahead. Until the next time, from me, Chris Ashmore, goodbye.
Business Matters is proudly sponsored by Print Supplies Frosses. With 21 years in business, Print Supplies provides managed print solutions with local support and remote ink monitoring, saving your business time and money. Print Supplies, your local printer and photocopier company.